Your child's happiness, their success in life, is all of that a measure of how good you are at parenting? Child psychologist Allison Gopnik says we've come to think so, but it shouldn't be that way. In her new book, The Gardener and the Carpenter, Gopnik calls on you to reconsider what it means to be a parent.
The very word parenting and the concept that goes with it is remarkably recent. So it's really only in the 1970s that the word became popular. And that word comes with a kind of picture. And the picture is that there's some set of expertise or techniques that people could acquire that would help them shape their child into a particular kind of child and thus into a particular kind of adult. And we just take that for granted in our culture, but it's actually an unusual and recent picture about what relationships between parents and children should be like. And more to the point, what led me to write this book is that it's very different from the picture that comes out of the science, and especially some really exciting recent science.
Well, then what's another model of being a parent that's not parenting?
So you could think of the parenting model as being kind of thinking of being a parent as being like a carpenter. You have a particular kind of material, and if you just have the right kind of expertise and tools, you'll be able to shape it into a particular chair. And the model that comes out of the science is instead that caregivers are designed to give young human beings a protected period, a space in which they can explore new possibilities, do new things, do things that have never been done before. So even if you could accomplish the parenting model goal of shaping your child to come out a particular way, you'd be defeating the whole evolutionary and psychological point of childhood by doing it. It's more like a gardener who doesn't know what's going to happen in the garden, but tries to create a resilient, dynamic ecosystem that can respond to changes in the weather and seasons in somewhat unpredictable ways. That's a better picture of what being a parent is all about.
Well, of course, when you garden, if one of your plants dies, you just plant another one. How can we be gardeners when we want so desperately for that plant to thrive?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the dilemma. So parents do and should care about their children and care about their future and care about what's going to happen to them. But, you know, if you think about it more deeply, if you think about the way that we care for our children, if the only reason we cared for our children was because we wanted them to come out a particular way, you know, we'd go out and find the children that were the most promising and just put all our love and affection into them. And that's not what being a parent is like. Part of what makes being a parent so profound and important is that we love that child kind of independently of whatever their particular features and properties are. And I think that unconditional commitment is exactly the kind of emotion, the kind of feeling that we have that enables us to care about that child and care for that child sort of independently of how they turn out in the end.
You write that Americans used to learn to be parents by doing it before we got there. How did that happen?
Well, for most of human history, the way that you learned how to care for a child was by caring for children yourself. I talk a lot in the book about the new work in evolutionary biology about the origins of childhood. And we really evolved to raise children in this extended family where there were a lot of people all involved and invested in the care of these children. And our children are dependent and immature for much longer than the children of any other species. And one of the side effects of that was that by the time we had children ourselves, we'd taken care of our younger siblings, younger cousins. We'd seen our aunts and our uncles and other older siblings take care of children. We had a lot of experience in caregiving. And it's really only in that same 30 years when parenting was on the rise that wasn't true anymore, that people were having children for the first time when they were 40, when they'd spent a long time working and going to school, but they hadn't actually had any experience of caring for children themselves. So it's no wonder that they thought, well, this is like working. I can get expertise from people who know more than I do, and that will tell me how to do this. And there's a billion-dollar parenting industry that's the result.
You know, Allison, my father probably didn't consult any experts, and what my father taught me was to explode in derisive anger, and I feel like I learned a lot from experts. So, you know, what's so bad about experts?
Well, there's nothing wrong about experts. We all try and get help anywhere that we can, but I think it should be reassuring and liberating for parents to know that essentially if they follow their intuitions, love their children, pass on the values that are important to them, the children will do the rest. The children can take the information that's out there in the world around them. And the other part of the science in the book are amazing new studies showing just how sensitive and subtle children are in the way that they learn from adults. So, you know, I'm looking at you now. I'm not seeing explosive anger. Somehow you managed to take all that information from the people around you and turn it into something different, turn it into something new. And that's what childhood is all about. Childhood is about taking what the previous generation did and remixing and changing and altering it so that we come up with something new. And being a caregiver is loving children enough, providing enough of a warm, safe, stable environment that they can explore in those kinds of ways.
What's your take on kids and computers?
Yeah, so I have a whole chapter about kids and technology in the book, and I'm much more optimistic than I think a lot of cultural commentators are. So there's quite a lot of panic about children and screens and computers. And of course, we won't know for another 20 years what the effects are going to be. But if we look at it from a historical perspective, there's been panic every time there's been a new technology. And I think there's actually an interesting scientific reason for that, which is that adults really do have a hard time mastering new technologies. So for adults, it feels like something like the internet is disruptive and attention demanding and just difficult. But I think we have lots of evidence that for children, even children's brains are designed to master new technologies in a much more effortless and spontaneous way. And the result of that is that, as I say in the book, you know, the day before you were born always looks like Eden, and the day after your children were born always looks like Mad Max. So the technology that you were born with doesn't look like technology. It just looks like stuff. And the technology that your children are engaged in looks like scary, new, difficult technology. And, you know, if you read reactions even to writing, to printing, to the train, to the telegraph, to the television, that same kind of panic happens over and over again. And it's interesting because, again, what the science suggests is the very point of childhood, the very point of that long protected period, is to give human beings this time to invent and master new technologies. We've been doing that ever since we were human. Part of what makes us human is our ability to have culture pass on tools to a new generation, to have each new generation do something different from the previous generation, and to have the previous generation say that the world is going to hell in a handbasket at the same time.
Can you share an aha moment from your own experience being a parent?
Oh, well, one thing is perhaps the biggest, most relevant aha at the moment for me is being a grandparent. So becoming a grandmother, definitely an aha moment for me was that, you know, when you're actually giving birth, there's a million things that are happening to you physically and biologically. So this baby comes out and you're madly in love with the baby. The aha for me was I was a grandmother. I was exactly the same person 2 days after my grandson was born as I was before, except that now I was a person who would give my life for this baby. And that moment of realizing that, you know, it's not that you take care of these children because you love them. It's that you love them because you care for them. The way that just caring for this baby could really transform your whole attitude towards the world and yourself. That was a pretty, and could do it without pregnancy, without hormones, without any of that. That was a serious aha moment for me.
So in your estimation, Allison, what do children need?
Well, I think the three things that young children need are mud, livestock, and relatives. And
mud, livestock, and relatives.
They need a place to play, something that they can explore physically, a biological world that they can explore and be part of. That's the garden. And they need people, not just one person, but a lot of people who care about them and for them. And in an urban society, mud, livestock, and relatives tend to be in sort of short supply. But if you look at something like a great early childhood education program, a great preschool or childcare, you can see that we provide the equivalent of that. We can have sandboxes and guinea pigs and really excellent preschool teachers. They do the same thing. They give children a rich physical environment that they can physically explore. They give children a chance to be part of the natural and biological world. And they give children grown-ups who care about them, which is probably the most important thing in children's development.
Sometimes it's helpful when someone tells me to stop doing something because I can picture and recognize when I'm doing it. Is there one thing you want parents to stop? Don't do that.
Well, I think stop worrying about whether what you're going to do now is going to affect your children 20 years from now. And that's something that's very hard to avoid. I certainly have not managed to avoid it in raising my own children. It's a very natural way to think. But it isn't very well supported by the data. You can't tell what's going to happen to your children 20 years from now. There's not going to be any straightforward relationship between the little decisions that you make now and what happens to them 20 years from now. So a much better way to think about it is, is my child thriving now? And what can I do to make my child and me thrive in this particular relationship at this particular moment with this particular child and this particular parent?
Child psychologist Allison Gopnik is out with this new book called The Gardener and the Carpenter, asking you to rethink what it means to be a parent. And you can hear more from her tonight, in fact, because Allison Gopnik is speaking at Town Hall Seattle at 7:30. This is KUOW's The Record.